on with RPCs, that means remote procedure calls, and we started it last week that we said the remote procedure call is basically an extension of the existing concept with a local procedure call, and to have it also available in a distributed environment. And we can look at some of the properties, and also we would look at the differences between it, because there are, even if we try to make them as similar as they are as possible, but there are still some slight differences. And in a way, when we talked about the local procedure call, we said there is a transfer of data and transfer of control from the caller to the callee, and then the execution, and then comes back to the caller again. The same thing is done by the remote procedure call. You basically use a synchronous scheme, and the synchronous scheme is basically here that you send the request, execute the request, and then send the result back. And therefore, in that sense, it's a synchronous scheme. The point is here that this time the client or the caller is basically blocked, and therefore, in that sense, we also include or integrate something like a timeout to avoid endless blocking. Also here, the point is here, the client basically waits for a certain time, and then if it doesn't get an answer, then it's unblocked, and then it can decide if it tries it again or if it binds to a different server or whatever. And because otherwise we would have an endless blocking here. We can look at some of the differences between RPC and local procedure call. And certainly one of the important aspects here is that the caller and the callee run in different processes. And that means we don't have a shared address space. And especially if you think of C programming, then very often you have something like these shared global variables, which you introduce at the very beginning, and then they can be used from everywhere else. And that's not something what you have available here. No shared global variables. And that's very typical programming style in C, to have these in these header files, which you use from everywhere else. The other thing is you don't have a common runtime environment, and the point we will later see, well, what do you do with parameters like call by reference? And it would not really make a sense to include in a remote procedure call basically an address in the address space of the caller, because this may not make sense at the address space of the callee. Therefore, we need something else. The other thing is we have this different lifespan of client and server. For example, if the client makes the invocation, the server might not be up and running, and we will later see with RMI or as well as with Corba, there is something like an activation phase. In that sense, for example, if the server object is not up and running, the invocation environment of performing the remote method invocation basically activates the object. This is not something what we have available usually in the RPC. At that time, it did not really exist. Therefore, in that sense, if the server is not up and running, basically the client waits until it times out, and then it decides if it makes another invocation or not, and or if it basically tries to bind to a different server. But usually with RPC, you don't really have the possibility of activate a server which is not up and running. And certainly the last point is handling communication failures and as well as machine crashes. If you have a local procedure call, that's not something which has to be handled. Because if the machine crashes, the caller as well as the callee go away. If communication failures, you don't have a communication. You're always within the same address space, and you don't really have any communication messages going back and forth. We can look at some basic characteristics. The important thing is here that we have a uniform call semantics, and that means here no messages, and no messages for programmer. And the programmer basically uses for RPC just a regular procedure call. And it means that the programmer does not really have to build something like a TCP message or an HTTP message. In that sense, the message is then actually built by the RPC environment itself. Usually we talk about UDP or TCP, but you could use other protocols. But in general, they use TCP or UDP. The other point is here, type checking. Therefore, you can do type checking during compilation phase. So here, during compilation phase. And the point is here that during compilation, there's already a check if the parameters are valid or not. And if you would use messages, then you could not really do any type checking during the compilation phase. Because then basically you have this message, this TCP message, which is built, and that's built dynamically during the code execution. And you put, as a programming, you put all the different parameters together. Type checking here means you can check if the parameters from the declaration and the parameters from the invocation basically match. And that you can do at compilation phase. And therefore, a lot of errors, like with mismatching parameters and results, you can already find during the compilation phase, much earlier and not during execution time. Parameter functionality, and certainly it's not a problem by call by value, because if you have an integer or whatever, or real, that's not a problem. But what do you do, as I mentioned already before, call by reference, which is very common in parameters, that's, as I mentioned, you could not really use. And what you do is you match it into something like call by copy and restore. And what that means, if you have the address space of the caller, and then you have the address space of the callee, that means where the remote procedure is executed, you have here the data structure. This data structure is copied over and generated on the in the callee address space. Here in the caller basically uses as a reference its address. Here on this side, it uses just as a parameter its address. It's the data is transferred, and then the parameter, the address parameter, is basically mapped into the address of the new location in the address space of the callee. And then when the procedure is then executed, it basically also gets as a parameter an address. But the RPC, the underlying RPC system, would basically do an address mapping. This address mapping is done by the RPC system, and it's not done by the application programmer. And therefore, in that sense, it's you could very easily, like a procedure which was previously local, you could also transfer into a remote procedure, because the procedure signature basically stays the same. And certainly the point is here that it's a lot more complicated with compared to a local procedure, because here, if this procedure does some modification here, you have to transfer this data back, because otherwise you lose the results. And usually what wire use an address parameter is because you use it as a result also. And therefore, in that sense, you have to transfer that data structure back, replace this one, and then continue on in the caller side. And a second aspect to be considered is the following. If you use thread programming, that at that time, this data structure has to be somewhere locked. Therefore, in that sense, you don't really want to have the data structure modified by another thread in the meantime, because otherwise you might get into to trouble when you copy it over, then it comes copied back into the address space here. Therefore, it's a lot more complicated, like as called by reference in the local address space. The other thing is the other characteristics, you want to optimize the response time and not the throughput. Therefore, a remote procedure call should happen very quickly. And usually, as I mentioned before, the amount of data to be transferred by an RPC is usually rather small. But by call by reference, certainly it can be larger, because you have to transfer the data. And it also means that, for example, if you do call by copy here, you have to avoid when you flatten a data structure like a tree and copy that over, you have to be careful that you don't have any circular data structures. Therefore, in that sense, you have to recognize that you have to already copy the one node and then see where you have circular data structures, and because otherwise you have a endless flattening. Other error cases, as I already mentioned, you have now here other things like bind operation. You don't find the server. The request times out if it takes too long, or the request message is lost. And another point could be, for example, if you use this call by copy and restore, that the arguments are too large. And the point is here, from the application programmer's perspective, that you want to have a remote procedure call as transparent as possible. And certainly the communication failures you want to have happening somewhat transparently to the application programmer. But what you have to add as an application programmer, exception handling, which handles something like timeouts or communication failures. And if you do exception handling for a local procedure call, it would mean you handle things like the arguments is incorrect or the argument is invalid or something like that. But for a remote procedure call, you would add also in exception handling that you would not be able to communicate with the remote callee. And that's also, in that sense, it's not completely transparent to the application programmer, but I would say to a large degree it's transparent. But it would add, the application program would add something like communication exception handling. The other aspect, when we look at the ISO OSI protocol, and that's now just on to go out to the computer network content. Certainly, if you look at the internet protocol layering, then this is the transport protocol layer, which you also have in the internet protocol layering. Here on this on the lower level, you have these lower level network protocols. So here, lower level network protocols, and there the things like IP protocol layer or the host access layer. But if you have the internet layer, these three layers are basically all integrated into the application layer. If you take a look at the ISO OSI protocol stack, here the point is you have three more, and they are somewhat relevant or also interesting for the RPC, because here on this level you would have the message exchange, because even if you have an RPC, certainly what happens, this remote procedure call is then basically mapped by the underlying RPC runtime environment. It's mapped into messages, and in the end, certainly you transfer TCP or UDP messages. I mean, it's not that it's something different, but the mapping is not done by the application programmer. It's done automatically by the runtime system from the RPC. Therefore, in that sense here, you have this request-response protocol. Here, it hides communication details, and an important part of it is here, mapping of data representations. As a here mapping of data representations. And that means here that you could have different representations of the same data type at the caller environment as well as the callee environment. And the mapping is done here, actually. And on the upper level, you have then the client-server exchange model. Here on this here, you have the socket interface. And on the lower level, UDP as an data packets without opening a session. TCP opens a session, and therefore it has flow control. And C looks and checks which packets are received correctly, in which order. Here with UDP, basically packets can be lost, and therefore in that sense you need something in the application program to find out if packets were lost. Here, if packets were lost, the TCP layer basically handles that. It's a more a correct delivery support. The other thing is here, RPC versus message exchange. The thing is here, it's here, message exchange is asynchronous, RPC is synchronous. Here you have just one call, the procedure call. Here you have two primitives, send and receive. But that's your use for every message exchange. It's basically the same two primitives. Here you would have an RPC call for each procedure. The messages are configured by RPC system. Here you do it as a programmer. Usually you have one open RPC. Here you might have multiple messages going back and forth. And the exchange protocols, what you use here is you might have a request protocol. Therefore, in that sense, you have only from the client to the server in one direction. Here you have it in both directions, send it and get an answer back. Here you would have a request reply, and then you would have sent an acknowledgement. And that's, for example, use in a context for exactly once semantics, because then you give the callee the information to eliminate the entry in its table where it keeps track of all the received requests and where it stores the results in case the result or the reply message was lost by the communication. Another aspect we can look at it after the introduction is how an application would basically would look like, and in that sense also how to implement it. And an important part of it, very early stops were introduced, and that encapsulates communication details. And all the communication details were basically put together in these stops. And you have these stops on both sides, on the caller side as well as the callee side. And later on we will see that actually these stops can be generated automatically, and you don't really have to program them anymore. Therefore, if you look at the historic development of distributed application programming, first the application programmer was programming the all the TCP and UDP messages by himself. The next step was to encapsulate all communication details in these stubs, and the application programmer was then basically programming the individual stubs, but on a really central place. And the next step was then to automatically generate these stubs and then avoid any communication detail or any communication programming failures. And if we look at these stubs, what their point is, that therefore in that sense, as I mentioned, you encapsulate the distribution specifics, and we can say stubs represent interfaces, in that sense the signatures. And the interesting part of it, we can say a client stub, that's here, that contains the proxy definition of the remote procedure. Therefore, in that sense, the proxy definition you have here in it. And the point is here, if the client invokes, makes the procedure call, the client thinks the procedure is defined here. In the same way is here, you map, the proxy basically maps the procedure call into a request message, and that request message is then going down to all the different layers in your protocol stack. Then you have a message transfer, and then you might have here a whole internet environment in between. There it's arrived here on the network code. You go up the protocol stack, like the host access and so on, and come to the TCP layer, and then come to the server stub, and then this message is basically mapped again into a procedure call. Therefore, you have something like here, we would say a proxy invocation. So here, proxy invocation. So here, invocation. And for the procedure, it looks like the call was local. And if we have this call by copy and restore, then this stub basically flattens the data structure, makes here something, a transferable data structure out of it, transfers the data structure. This server stub basically takes the flattened data structure and then generates the representation in the address space, and then makes a proxy or a procedure call using just the address towards this newly generated data structure. And therefore, in that sense, the client stub is certainly something more complicated than just taking or generating a message and then transferring the message from the caller to the callee or the client and server. The next aspect, well, as I mentioned already, most of the things I already mentioned already, what the stub already does, it assigns the call to the correct server. Therefore, in that sense, the stub is also a part of it which does the binding between the client and the server. And it could mean that has to contact something like a directory service to find out what is the correct address, the correct IP address to connect to the server. And the point is that it's not the application programmer who does the binding of to the appropriate server. It's basically the stub which does the binding to the appropriate server. It could be done, as we will see later, once, or it could be done with every individual RPC message and or RPC request. If you do that with every individual RPC request, it means that actually the server could migrate between different RPC requests, and the client does not really notice it, and it just works as it should be. The other aspect that client stub was it does not do, it does not do any, so here, no routing or flow control. These things are done by the underlying network layer. And because with the client stub, we have only one outstanding RPC message. And the flow control is relevant if you have multiple packets outstanding. And here we have only one RPC message outstanding. Then it does the representation in the transmission format, decoding of results, propagating to the client application, and then at the end it does the unblocking of the client. And the the matching thing is done on the server stub. You do the decoding of the parameters. Certainly, you also map the message into the appropriate service operation. You locate it where it is, and usually, what you get is, for example, in the original RPC message from Sun and from the Xerox environment as it was developed originally, what you had is a table, and the table had on one side the name of the server operation, and on the other column it had the ID, and you shipped only with the RPC request, you ship just the ID, which is rather short, and then you had a matching table here with the ID and then the address, where to find it in the address space. And that's then what happens. You did the invocation of the, you started the execution at the address in the address space, and then when it got the results, it prepared it into the transmission format, and then it sends it back to the client. Therefore, in that sense, it's rather straightforward. The next thing is how do you implement the thing? And the implementation of it, it's certainly if you do the programming of the RPC of the stubs manually, as it was done in the early stages of RPCs. Certainly, when every programmer does that, the probability of doing some programming errors, especially with flattening the data structure, can be quite high, depending on the proficiency and the skills of the application programmer. And and that's one of the point is to basically look at it. Can we actually generate the stub code? And it certainly that was one of the early improvements to use some what they call this RPC generator. And what happens is that there was a language developed, which is called this IDL, or this interface definition language. So here, interface definition language. And that allowed to specify the interface between the client and the server declaratively. Therefore, in that sense, what the application programmer really provided was a declarative description of the interface. And out of the of this declarative interface description, the stub was then generated. Certainly, it included all kinds of additional code, like this binding code, which is pretty similar with all the individual RPC requests. Therefore, it was rather easy to generate, and it was not really required by every application programmer to program it over and over again. And it also meant like flattening a tree structure that can be programmed once, and in that sense it could be included then in the RPC generator. But the interface was then described here, and you had the client the client code, and well, now I hear this a really high pitch sound, and well, now it goes away. And then you have here the client programming, the server programming. The RPC generator basically generates out of this a client stub and a server stub, and also some data transmission information, like how does the data structure look like. So here the data structure or transmission, and it also means that, for example, if you have certain data structure, then it also means how to map this local data structure into your appropriate data structure for transmission, like a tree or something. That's this additional information is provided in this header file. And like if you use C programming and you have something equivalent with other programming languages. The point is here, it reduces the effort, the time necessary for application programming, and also somewhat it reduces the possibilities of making failures from the application programmer. And if we look now at an application program, it's basically, if you look at the programmer here, you start with the RPC interface, a specification that's here declarative. You do the client programming, you do the server programming and the server operations. You run here the RPC generator over it. You generate the stubs together with the data transformation header files. Here the server stubs. Then you compile the things. You have here the application component, the client component, here the server stub operations component, and then you link it together, and then you have the client application. Point is here, certainly that's you have to do in the early stage. Together, this you can do in a similar stage here with client and client application and server operations, but you can also do the server operations much earlier and do the client application much later. And in that sense, this part of it is automatically generated. This part, As I mean, here, that's automatically, this part is automatically generated, but what you write here is more or less, that's exactly this this layer by the application programmer. And if you look then at an application, it looks like the following, that you have on one hand certainly the network. Here, this is programmed by the application programmer. That's the client application component, the client stub. This is generated, but the specification was written by the application programmer. You have the RPC system here, which does the send and receive of messages. Here, the similar thing on the server side. And here, this part is basically a system part, and that is an application programmer part. And that would be more or less the structure, the internal structure of a distributed application. And now you can have like multiple of these components where they usually have a lot more client components interacting with the similar or same service operations. You have multiple service operations residing on different in different environments. But here, the something like an RPC system is responsible for a whole bunch of these service operations, which are which reside on the same server machine. Last thing in this context, we can look at the RPC language, and that's only a very short description of it. And I would not really go into it in large detail. It's very similar to a C specification, and you have different types, like this RPC L, also this remote procedure language, which was developed by Sun. Then you have an alternative, which is the CORBA IDL, which was developed from the CORBA environment. And here the you have, in one sense, the three different types which you use from like C programming. You have the constant declarations. You have the type declarations. If you include new data types, there are data types like int, like string or boolean and so on, which are basically basic data types, and then you could have new data types using, for example, in a C environment, struct. Then you can define completely new data structures, or in other languages you could have record, and then you can have new data types. And here the other thing is, here you provide the operations declarations. These are more or less signatures. So here, signature. So here, signature of procedures, and as you know it from local procedures. And what you have additionally is, you have this interface identifier, and then you have this attribute list. And one of the things is what you have in the attribute list. You have the version of the RPC system, and that would mean you can have support multiple versions. So here, support multiple RPC versions in parallel. Therefore, the server could provide RPC interfaces for multiple versions, and therefore, in that sense, you have a slow migration to new versions. You don't really have a stop and restart. And the other thing is, you can already include here a fixed port and a fixed host address. Therefore, in that sense, you avoid like going to the directory service and do a mapping of a name to an address. It improves the timing. Certainly, you have then the disadvantage of dynamic, that you can't really do dynamic binding. But on one hand, you're faster, but if the server migrates, you basically get an error message because it does not work anymore. And you would have to change the interface description. And therefore, you would have to basically generate a new version of your client application, because the client stub is not correct anymore. It's really now part of the client stub. And I think we can stop here, and tomorrow we would continue basically then with more things of RPC, and then mostly with RM.